chronic alcoholic. It started for me about 16 years ago, you know, back in the Midwest, Indianapolis, Indiana. I started out, you know, drinking and abusing, you know, myself and people around me, you know. I moved west, you know, years later, and marriage, and start, you know, and, you know, I was still fucking up, you know. Eventually, you know, me and the wife broke up, and, you know, I was back out there again, you know. A couple of weeks from now, I went to the O'Connor Hospital, drug and alcohol recovery house over there, and I got into the program, and I started going to meetings, you know. I had about 60 days sober, and I was down at the Alano West, and they was talking about recovery, you know. And I was in a fucked up space that day. So they was talking about this recovery, you know, and it's just like, it appeared to me they had something, but I wanted it, but I didn't know how to go about getting it. So, you know, I had to get a sponsor. So I after the meeting was over, I talked to this guy, and he introduced me to my sponsor that I got now. And he gave me his number and told me to give him a call. So I called him a couple of days later and came over there, and we talked. And he gave me some directions, you know. I said, well, you know, that's pretty easy to do, you know. So I started going to a lot of men's meetings, you know. And it was like, at first, I got kind of turned off because, you know, I felt as though I wasn't really an alcoholic, you know. What the sense should I go to these meetings, you know. So, you know, but I stuck around, you know. The guys were saying, you know, keep coming back. You know, I didn't really want to hear that shit, you know, keep coming back. So, you know, I still came back, you know. So, after I started getting into the book, you know, and reading it, you know, and I took my step before the step, you know, and the first step, and the second, you know, and then when I got down to the third, you know, then my sponsor, you know, when we took the third step, you know, he said he had this little thing, you know, this little ritual that he did, got down, you know, we got down on our knees, you know, and, you know, right then and there, you know, it was just like, you know, like, I was too, you know, up there to, you know, I mean, it was just like, that was the first time I ever did that in a hell of a long time, you know, and we said a third step prayer. And I think that's where I really took off at, you know, because by the grace of God today, you know, I'm clean and sober, you know, and I'm looking at a year, you know, and I just recently took my fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh with my sponsor, and it was just like I was on a natural high, you know, and afterwards, you know, I came down. And my sponsor, you know, we walked out. We was going to get something to eat. And I said, well, where am I? And he said, I said, well, I'm on the fifth step. He said, no, you just took your fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. I said, oh, did I? You know, I mean, that's just where my head was at. You know, I was real enlightened, you know. It was just like, you know, I committed, you know, I really committed myself. I really committed myself that night, you know. It was just like it gave me a sense of joy, release, you know, all that shit that I was packing on my shoulders for a hell of a long time, you know, that's just behind me today, you know. I'm able to, you know, come into these rooms, you know, and introduce myself as an alcoholic, you know, and which, like, that was something I wouldn't have been able to do, you know, a year ago. You know, I wasn't no alcoholic, you know. I was always into that denial, you know, I mean, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of total abstinence, you know, and, you know, and that's not taking nothing, you know. I even watch the medicine I take, you know. Like, for example, I'm getting married tomorrow, you know. But, you know, I mean, you know, this will be my third marriage, you know. But, I don't really have no regrets, you know. I'm not trying to, you know, like, put something off, you know, put a little nest egg off to the side, you know, like, if it don't work, you know, I still got some get out money, you know. It's just like, I'm putting all the cards on the table, you know, and I put it in God's hands, you know, so what's going to be, it's going to be, you know. But, you know, if it don't go down, you know, I'm not going to take nothing, you know. I know what to do, you know. I know to pick up that little black book I got and call somebody, you know. But, you know, like, we had some, my future wife bought some apple juice, you know, that sparkling shit, you know, that's in a bottle like champagne. And I was sitting there, you know, I opened it up just to test it, you know, for her to test it. You know, I said, well, if that shit got any alcohol, I don't want it, you know, just like that. So I called my stepdaughter in there, and I had her to taste it, and then I had my future wife to taste it, then I tasted it, you know. I mean, that's just how aware I am today, you know, about what the intake that, you know, goes into my body, you know. It's just like, you know, I don't want to fuck up what I got going. You know, I've been the type of guy that, you know, I do something for a while, then I say, oh, fuck it, you know, and then I just go the other way, you know. But, you know, like today, you know, I got some guidance in my life, you know. It's just like my sponsor, he works with me, you know. Guys that, you know, that I come around, you know, they constantly talking with me, you know, and tell me how, you know, how grateful they are, you know, that I'm here, you know. And it just blows me away, you know, that I can say that I got a friend, or I got some friends today, you know, because when I was out there, I just had associates, you know. People wanted me for what I had, you know, what I could do for them, you know. But, you know, like today, you know, it's just altogether different, you know. I'm able to just be Virgil, you know, and that's a hell of a good feeling, you know. I don't have to put up no facade for nobody, you know. I was in a situation today where, at work, where we were just sitting around talking, and I confronted my coworker. And she brought out some issues, you know, that I was trying to put her down and shit, you know. And I said, well, I hear what you're saying, but, I don't recognize it, you know. So she took me back, and I immediately made amends, you know, and given the benefit of the doubt, you know, until I saw, you know, where it's, you know, it wasn't what I did, it was the way I said it, you know, that brought that on. But, you know, I was able to make that amends right there on the spot. I didn't, you know, try to take it out the door and think about it and come back, you know. And, that's what's going on with me, you know. It's just like I'm able to recognize a lot of my fears, you know. It's just like when I took my fourth step, you know, and I asked my sponsor, I said, well, do you see these things in me that you say, you know? And he said, yeah, you know. So I had made this list, and he asked me, you know, about, well, do you feel like you improved, you know? And I really, you know, I honestly, you know, thought in my mind, you know, did I or didn't I, you know. And he showed me where I improved in a lot of areas, you know, but I still need work, you know. And I'm able to accept that today, you know. When I get, you know, fucked up, when I have those fucked up feelings, you know, it's natural, you know. It's as long as I don't, you know, as long as I don't take no drink over it, you know, as long as I don't really let the shit get out of hand, you know, I'm able to, you know, maintain Virgil, you know. I'm able to keep a cool head where I don't have to drink. You know, and it's just like, it's just really overwhelming that, you know, like, why wasn't I aware of this a long time ago? You know, I heard about it on TV, on the radio, like that, but I never thought, you know, that something like that would ever happen to me, you know. But today, you know, in my life, you know, it's really going good, you know. I'm you know, I got a house, a couple of cars, you know. That's just material things, but, you know, a few years ago, shit, I was a greasy pork chop, you know. That's just, you know, I mean, that's just what it is, you know. I didn't have nothing. All I had was a job and a room, you know. Today, you know, I accomplished a lot of things, you know. But the most that really sticks out in me, you know, is I did have to take nothing today to come here and tell y'all about me, you know. And that's just one thing that, you know, I refused to do for a hell of a long time. You know, I told you what I want you to know, not what you wanted to know, you know. And I'm able to do that today, you know. And it's just a damn good feeling, you know. It's just like I'm committed now, you know. I made a real commitment with God, you know. I made a real commitment with myself. And I'm making a real commitment tomorrow, you know, which ain't no bullshit, you know. It's just like I'm going in there with my eyes open, you know, so I can't say, damn, I was on dope, you know, to do this, you know. But, you know, it's just like when I take those vows, you know, it's just like for death do your part, you know, if that be the case, you know. But, you know, but, you know, it's just like, you know, I am really grateful, you know. It's just like with the turnout of people tonight, you know, that's coming out, you know, just to, you know, get the message, you know, of what AA is all about. You know, it's just like my sponsor just celebrated his birthday yesterday, and I gave him a call, and I you know, it's just like I really was buzzing, you know, because he had his birthday, you know, because like you know, it was just a damn good feeling, you know. It's just so, you know, he always telling me how he loved me, you know. And I said, I can't love no man, you know, shit, you know. But you know, I said, yeah, okay, you know, I, you know. But you know, I'm able to say, you know, that I got some feelings for the man, you know. I got some genuine feelings for the man, and it's just like, I think he took over in the place of my father, you know, the father I really never had, you know, and because he had given me some good guidance, you know, and he's worked with me, you know. We done had our ups and downs, you know, and I was able to recognize that, and we just stepped over that shit and went on with what was happening, you know, and made me feel good that he called me up and he made amends with me, but I should have made the amends with him first, you know. You know, it's just like a couple of months ago, I could have took off on an ego trip on that, you know, but I look at it for just what it was, you know. He was in a bad space that particular night, and I just, you know, I was in a little playful mood, you know, as sometimes I am, you know. But, you know, I was able to look at that, and I made my amends with him. We embraced and went on about our business, you know. And I thought that was really unique. And, you know, it's just like, that's why I was buzzing the other night. You know, I wanted to, you know, tell him, you know, how I felt, you know, and how glad I was that he was celebrating, you know, his birthday, you know. But see, you know, my sponsor got a hell of a story, you know. It's just like, whenever he going to chair a meeting or something, you know, I like to be there, you know, because he really carries a message, you know, to the other alcoholic who still suffers, you know, and that is really dynamite to me, you know, because like things that he say, I can really use it, you know, and I really look at it and I examine it very carefully, you know, and you know, it's just a damn good feeling, you know. It got my my grand sponsor here too, you know. You know, it's just like at the Thursday night meetings, you know, it's just like the message that he carries, you know, it's just like he tell it like it is, you know, it's no bullshit, you know, it's just like I look at for what it is and accept it for what it is, and it makes good common sense, you know, that if I want to stay sober, you know, these are the things I have to do, you know. I gotta get into that book. You know, I got to say my prayers at night, you know, and I read my 24 hours, you know, and I try to work with others, you know, as much as I possibly can, you know, and it's a good feeling, you know. I had the privilege of a friend call me up. He was kind of hurt one night, and he called me up, you know, and it's about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I answered the phone. I said, well, let me get back to you, you know, because I was still asleep, and then, you know, after I hung up, I thought about it, you know. And I got up, and I went in the living room, and I called him, and I said, well, let's get together, you know. And he shared with me, and I shared with him. And I got brought him, you know, I got him back on the right path, you know. And I told my sponsor about it, you know, and you know, he told me, you know, that I was, you know, I didn't do no more than what I was supposed to do, you know. And it was like, to see that guy, you know, coming around in meetings now, it's a damn good feeling, you know. And it made me feel good that, you know, he wanted it. You know, it's just like the program is done on attraction rather than promotion, you know. And I think that's what attracted me to the program is my sponsor, you know. It's really what attracted me. You know, it's just like it's a good thing, you know. It's just like I was here a few months ago, you know, and shit, I never thought I'd be, you know, up here, you know, chairing a 10-minute speakers meeting, you know. It's just like, you know, my program is taking off, you know. My sponsor tell me all the time, you know, people know you, you know, they like you, you know. And I'm saying, well, you know, shit, he see more than I see, you know. But, you know, it's just like, you know, he's telling me for what it is, you know. Whether, you know, I accept it or reject it, it's up to me, you know. But he said all he owed me was honesty, you know. And I can accept that, you know. And I had a philosophy all my life, you know, don't bullshit me and I won't bullshit you, you know. But, I, you know, it's just like I turned that around, you know. Whether you bullshit me, I'm not going to bullshit you, you know. You know, it's just, you know, that's just, you know, where I'm at today, you know, in my life, you know. I'm just trying to work the steps, you know, to the best of my ability and to practice these principles in all my affairs, you know. Sometimes it gets hard, you know, especially at home, you know. I think I throw AA out the door, you know, and go with Virgil's way, you know. But, you know, I try, you know. I put forth effort, you know. I'm constantly doing what I think I'm supposed to do, you know. And it's really working in my life, you know. And it's just like, I'm trying to, you know, keep that foot forward. You know, if I feel like I'm regressing, you know, I get my ass back into those meetings, you know, and I talk to guys, you know, and I let people know what's going on in my life today, you know, and I don't try to shield shit, you know, anymore, you know. It's just like I had a record of my past ease up on me. Super Bowl Sunday, you know, the sheriff came to the door, you know, and served me with some papers and shit. You know, I just woke up, you know, and I was really pissed off, you know, but I expected it, but wasn't nothing I could do about it but accept it, you know, and I vented over it a little bit, you know, and then I went to court, then I dealt with it, you know, and then I, and, you know, it's just like I ended up having to pay $17,000, you know, shit, you know, but, you know, I'm able to deal with that today, you know, it's no big deal, you know, what's going to be is going to be, you know, it's just like I have to pay the calls, you know, so, you know, it's just like, that's what happened, you know, and I dealt with that one, and I think I dealt with that one good, you know, because years ago, I probably would have just took off, you know, that shit would have happened, you know, but I didn't, you know, I choose not to, you know, and I didn't have to take nothing over that, you know. The program has given me awareness. I got a higher power today, that one I choose to call God, you know. I got a sponsor, you know, I got people that love me, you know, and I'm learning how to love, you know, and trust, you know, I'm able to trust some, you know, but, you know, in time, you know, and it's just, you know, it's, people care about me, you know, and I care about other people, you know, I'm able to have feelings today, you know. And, you know, I think I kind of, you know, if I go past 10 minutes, you know, it begins to get bullshit like I heard before, you know. So, you know, I, like my sponsor said, you know, I'm just trying to keep it plain and simple, you know. So I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for letting me share a little bit of my life with you tonight. Thank you.
5:30, when the bell rang for my old man to go to work, he got up and went to work. He never missed work. He wasn't an alcoholic. My mother would wait until 6 o'clock when the saloons opened, and she would drag her broken ass out of that bed and put on an old house dress and an old winter coat and a babushka around what was left of her hair. And she would go out and get herself a bottle. And she'd always come home with a bottle and another uncle. Yeah, I had a lot of uncles when I was a kid. Yeah, I had white uncles, I had black uncles, I had Oriental uncles. I could never figure that one out either, you know. Maybe that's why my middle name is Lee. I don't know. There ain't no Polacks named Lee. You know, there's a Chinaman named Lee, you know. Very painful part of my story. When I was a kid, 10 years old, I had the responsibilities of an adult in our home. See, my old man couldn't give my mother any money for groceries or paying the bills or nothing that normal housewives get, expense money. Because my mom would drink it. It's just that simple, you understand. So guess who was elected to do all the shopping? I was. Guess who did all the cooking? All the house cleaning. Guess who got my brother up and gave him a bath and dressed him and took him to school? Me, 10 years old, man. No wonder I became a fucking drunk. How could I deal with life, 10 years old, and all these responsibilities and these feelings? Understand? We were poor people. We were. And I ain't going to give you no jokes about that. It was a fact. We were poor. Nowadays, the people call it the ghetto. We didn't call it the ghetto. We called it the neighborhood. We all had the same fucking thing. Nothing. You know. My old man, you know, wanted to get an education, a parochial education. I went to a grammar school called Our Lady of Perpetual Guilt. Yeah. And I had the Roman Catholic Polish priests and nuns, you know. They beat the shit out of me, you know. That's where my hair went, them priests, you know. Unreal. I went to an all-boys public school, high school in Chicago called Tilden Technical High School. See, my old man only wanted me to do two things, go to school, study, get good grades, and play ball, because he knew that the only way I would ever get a formal education, a college education, is by playing ball, get a scholarship. That's the only way you got out of our neighborhood. No one had any money to go to school. So I went to Tilden Tech. I started on a football team when I was a sophomore, and later as a sophomore, a junior, and a senior. And I was all-city and honorable mention all-state my senior year. And as a result of that, I graduated from high school when I was 16 years old. I had 28 college scholarships. I signed a letter of intent, a national letter of intent, to go to the University of Notre Dame to play football for Frank Leahy. That's when I was 16 years old. The day I was 17, I didn't walk. I ran down and joined the United States Marine Corps. I did that for two reasons. Number one, the Korean War had popped and patriotism was in those days. And secondly, I wanted to get even with my papa for all the shit he had done to my mama. And that was the first time in my life I was able to say, fuck you, Pop, and I'm gone. You understand? I got to back up a little bit. I started drinking when I was about 15 years old. The definition of an alcoholic is a person who's lost his or her ability to control their drinking. In retrospect, now I look back, I was an alcoholic from Jump Street. I was an alcoholic from the very first time I took a drink because it changed my behavior. I liked the way it felt. It gave me the balls to do things that I wouldn't do normally. The fear was gone. You understand? The first time I took a drink, I got drunk. The first time I took a drink, I got into trouble. The first time I took a drink, I puked. The first time I took a drink, I passed out. My sponsor told me later on, you know, if it looks like mushroom, smells like mushroom, tastes like a mushroom, chances are it's a fucking mushroom, folks, you know. And that was me, you know. But I didn't know it at the time. My career, my military career was quite an eventful other than the fact that I was in the second wave at Incheon when I was 17 years old. I was back in the States at the age of 19, a combat veteran. I got stationed at Marine Air Station in Kaneohe, Hawaii. And all I did was there while I was there was play football and box. I was a jock. I drank. I didn't get in any real trouble. I hit the brig a couple of times because all good Marines go to the brig once in a while. Sailor loses your cock out, you knock him on his ass, you get busted, you go to the brig for fight. Nothing serious. I got discharged from the Marine Corps when I was 21 years old, and I came back home to Chicago. Now, I told you my neighborhood was all Polish, Italian, Rome, Catholic, Democrat. I fell in love with a childhood sweetheart whose name was Ellen Teresa Riley. Irish blood, right? Wrong. Should have stuck with the Polish woman. You know what I'm talking about? All I knew how to do when I got out of the military, I took a little quick inventory and said, what are you going to do now? And all I knew how to do was kill people, play football, and box. And, well, you know, you get a job doing that anywhere in Chicago, you know, killing people especially. I married this lady. We were married for about 10 minutes, and she got pregnant, you know, because in those days there was no monkey around. The kid took care of business. You know what I'm talking about? Boom. That was it. And all of a sudden I became aware that I was not only a newlywed husband, I was going to be a father pretty soon, and I had to become responsible and you know, become meaningful employed, bring home the bacon. So I asked myself what I could do, and I already told you what I could do, and I didn't want to do those things. But in those days, I was a pretty good-looking guy. In all modesty, I had all my hair. I didn't have these Coca-Cola bottles on my nose. Had my own teeth, and I didn't have all of this, you know. So I said to myself, well, you know, you're a personable young guy, and you like people. Become a bartender, right? Like people, right? Wrong. Lying son of a bitch. Hate people. Love booze. Yeah. Yeah. So I became a bartender, and as I told you already, see, I'm already an alcoholic. The disease had started working on me a long time ago, about 6 years ago, you understand. Of course, I don't want to hear nothing about it. No one ever mentioned it to me. But the progressiveness is taking place. And I kept, when I started attending bar, my drinking got worse and worse and worse. And my alcoholism got worse and worse and worse. And my alcoholic behavior got worse and worse and worse. And meantime, the baby was born, you know. And I'm coming home later and later after work. I'd get off at 2 o'clock. I'd flip me home at 2:30 in the morning. And I don't be coming home until 5 and 6. And I got, you know, the lipstick on my collar and other places and all this other stuff, you know. And my old lady didn't just fall off in no pumpkin truck. You understand? You know, and I know she had never heard of no Al-Anon because I ain't never heard of no AA. But somehow, some way, the higher power was watching over her even then because I came home one day fucked up. You understand, one morning, and she said to me, listen up, chump, in the morning, me and the baby are history. And I said, wait a minute now, hold it. Don't you realize who you're talking to? I mean, I'm the breadwinner in this fucking house. Know what I'm talking about? Where's your gratitude at? Look around you. This little 2.5-room apartment we got, you know, what do you think, this comes from nowhere? Those 3 pieces of furniture, almost paid for. You know, and it ain't like we ain't got no food in the house. There's 2 cans of tuna fish in there and some kielbasa, some Polish sausage, $6 cash money up there in the cookie jar. Don't be fucking with me, girl. Didn't work, man. She looked at me and she said, hey, I'm telling you, we're history. I said, I'll get some slick So she went to sleep, and at 6 or 5 o'clock, whatever it was, the alarm went off, and I went to work. And that night, I came straight home from work sober, man, right? Because I just thought she might not be jiving, and she wasn't jiving, man. She was gone. Baby was gone. Furniture was gone. Tuna fish was gone. Cookie jar was gone. Everything was gone except all my clothes in one big pile and the telephone. And I got what every alcoholic or addict really needs, right? The resentment. Deliver that motherfucker. Take my baby. Take my baby and shit. God damn. I was going to put her in a sewer, you understand? In a concrete kimono. That's where she was going, you know. So I dove into this thing called alcohol, you know, head first, you understand? And it happened so quickly for me, you know. I became unemployed and unemployable. There wasn't a joint on the south side of Chicago that hired me as a bartender. And, you know, and it talks about in the book, Seeking Lower Companionship. Yeah, I did that one. I got hooked up with two boyhood chums that I grew up with, two Dago kids in the neighborhood, Frankie and Vinny. And Frankie was a smack freak, you understand, had been since he's 14 years old. Heroin addict. And Vinny and I are full-blown wino. They ain't got no money for nothing else. So we're drinking that white port, lemon juice. And all of a sudden, you know, and Frankie's got about a $50 a day Jones in those days. In the 50s, that's a lot of money. And all of a sudden, we decided we got to do something. So there's an expression in our neighborhood, when you ain't working, you're stealing. So guess what we did? We got us a master plan. There's two winos and a smack freak, and we got us a master plan. And what we did is we went to work for the New York Central Railroad as Gandhi dancers outside working on the tracks in the snow. And the only reason we took the job is because we used to get a half-hour coffee break in the morning and half hour in the afternoon. And on the morning coffee break at 10 o'clock, we used to go stick up savings and loans associations. See, now I ain't talking about tiptoeing in and passing some teller a note. I'm talking about a Pollock and two Dagos walking in with the shit hanging out and saying, give us your money. And guess what? They used to give it to us, man. Yeah. Now, we get away with two banks in 3 days. See, what we used to do is get the money and go back to work on the railroad tracks. They never looked for you there, right? Now, let me tell you how bad I really was, folks. My cut of two bank jobs was $58,000 cash money. And I got that in my pocket, and I'm still drinking white port and lemon juice. Yeah. Now, we rap too tight. We're fucked up behind wine. Frankie got all the shit that he can handle. He's like this. And we go back the fourth day to make another joint. Only this time they knew we were coming. See, they had the joint staked out. And we walked in and said, hello. And I never heard so much shooting since Korea. And my partner Frankie was about a foot and a half or 2 feet over to my left. And he bought it. They gave him a third eye. And he you know, he's history. He's dead on the spot. And Vinny and I shot our way out of the place because the two detectives that were staking out the joint were rookies. And they was as scared as we was. And we split up. We got up and split out. And Vinny, don't ever pull no crime with no Italians. Because yeah. They ain't too sharp. You know what I'm talking about? 3 hours later, the police found him hiding underneath his sister's porch. And they took him downtown headquarters, Chicago, Lebanon State, and hung him on a door and played a cha-cha on his ass. And he told him he shot Martin Luther King, McKinley, John F. Kennedy, and I was with him. Yep. Sucker rolled right over on me. When I got to the program, this man right here, my sponsor, started talking to me about trust. And I said, later for you, man. Yeah. That's when the story ceases to be funny, because as a result of doing those crimes while under the influence of alcohol, and I was under the influence of alcohol because I could never rob nothing sober, I bought a 5 to 15 year sentence in Statesville Penitentiary in Joliet, Illinois, the most maximum security prison in the United States of America. And that's when I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in the Cook County Jail in Chicago waiting transfer to the joint. And I was in a felony division. And it was cold in that jail. I'll never forget it. And one of the screws came by and he says, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, what meeting? He said, there's an AA meeting in the chapel. And I says, AA, man, what's that? He said, well, they got free coffee and cigarettes. And I said, right on, take me, you know. So they put me in shackles because I was a maximum security risk. And, you know, and they took me to this meeting in the chapel. How many people have been in Cook County? Fess up. I thought I saw you. You were born there. What you talking about, man? Anyhow, in those days, before you went into the chapel of the Cook County Jail, just before you went in, they had a place there called Death Row because, see, they used to barbecue people there. And right outside the Death Row, in direct view of the whole population, was the electric chair, see? And what they used to do for the AA meetings. I don't know why, but he always used to uncover the electric chair. I don't know why he did that. David. But I remember I was in shackles, and I remember shuffling past death row and the chair, and I remember going in and drinking this coffee. It was hot and black, and it was sweet. And I remember the cigarettes were Pall Malls, and they were free, and they were loose. And I kept stuff in my pockets full of these squares and thinking these AA guys had to be a bunch of chumps, you understand? Because anyone who gave me all the coffee I could drink and squares that I could handle had to be some kind of a trick. And don't want to hear nothing about no alcoholism. No, sir. No, I just got in crack for doing something that was wrong, sociably unacceptable. And I got possible 15 years of doing the junk, motherfucker. Get away from me. You understand? Stay out of my face. See, that was my attitude. The book talks about it. Calls it belligerent denial. See, that's what I had, belligerent denial. And I went away to the joint. See, I went away to the joint. And I'll tell you what I did to make a long story short. I wound up doing 6 years in Statesville Penitentiary. 6 years of living in constant fear, one day at a time, and not being able to tell a single solitary soul that you were uptight, because if you did, you'd be somebody's old lady by morning. Just that simple. I had a guy one time at the Atlanta Club Beast come up to me with his jive, sober ass, and say to me, "Hey, man, how much time do you do?" I said, "I did 6 years." He said, "I did 26. I said, "You're dumber than me, asshole." And I say, "Ain't doing no more time. No, sir. Not one more dead time. Uh-uh." Yeah, I got cut loose, and part of my parole, I had two stipulations. One was that I go to a halfway house for ex-convicts in Chicago called St. Leonard's House on Chicago's west side. And the other one was that I go on antabuse. And I said, "What is this antabuse shit, man? That's for the minors, right?" The guy says, "You will take it or you will stay here." I said, "I'll take anything. Please let me go, you know." And they did. They opened the gates and let me out. And, you know, the book talks about alcohol being cunning, baffling, and powerful. Well, alcoholics are pretty cunning also. Every morning, there was 60 guys in the house, 6-0 ex-convicts in one house. And every morning, the priest used to come by. There was around 14 of us on antabuse, okay? And the director of the house used to come by. It was like communion, you understand? He'd line all these drunks up, you know, and he popped his antabuse in us, you know, and the little dude would be behind him with the tray of orange juice, you know. And I'd take my antabuse and then I'd go outside and back and stick my finger down my throat, you know, do that anorexia shot or whatever they call it, bulimia or limit. And I would lose my antabuse, you understand? And then I would go down to the corner and get myself a couple tall dogs of that good shit. And go outside in the back in the dark and drink that wine, you understand? And come back and be talking and everybody be looking at Paz and saying, "Man, Paz is fucked up behind antabuse. He's going to get sick and die," you know? And I wasn't about to get sick and die because I didn't have no antabuse in me and I was getting over on him. Wrong. One day the priest says, "Get the fuck out of my house, man." He says, "You loaded, you're fucking with the house and everybody in it. Hit the bricks." And I said, "Right on." Now, this is January in Chicago, man, and the hawk is out. I mean, it's cold, man. It's 20 below zero. The snow is this deep, and I'm too proud to drop a dime in the phone and call any human being for some help. So I went to the only place that you can go, man. I went to the streets. I went to Madison Street, Chicago's Skid Row, one of three Skid Rows in Chicago. Yeah. If the whole world was in the shape of an animal, that would be the asshole. Yeah. And I existed down there for a year and a half doing all the things that the so-called visible alcoholic has to do. You understand? I sold my blood twice a week for $5 a pint. I ate out of garbage cans. I saved for my supper at the Sally. I used to sleep underneath the sidewalk. I had a guy, we dug a cave underneath the sidewalk and we wrapped ourselves up in cardboard and newspaper. And I had a bottle of wine on my hip, but I want to tell you something. I wasn't an alcoholic. I want you to know that. No, sir. If I could only get a job, everything would be fine, see? Yeah. If you can't get a job in Chicago, you ain't got a pulse beat. You know what I'm talking about? But how can you get a job when you can't stand up? See, I was not powerless over alcohol. I just couldn't stand up. Help me up, you understand? I could do anything, but help me up, please. And one day, you know, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I did my first inventory. I didn't know what it was then. I know what it is now. I didn't write nothing. I just took a look at my life. I said, "Man, you just come out of the penitentiary, did 6 years of that mother, and you've been sleeping underneath the sidewalk for a year and a half. You're crazy. You're drinking that shit. You're going nuts. You know, what is it with you?" And I discovered what it was. See, it was Chicago. Yeah. Chicago sucks. You understand? So I took my first geographic. I got on the bus. And I woke up in Lincoln, Nebraska. Don't know anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska. Uh-uh. No, never been there before. Never go back either. If you're going to do some heavy dealing or drinking or using, don't watch my lips. Do not go to Lincoln, Nebraska. That's a 7-day Adventist town, man. Them people are some strict people, man. They don't believe in nothing. Smoking, drinking. Like I say, they don't even make love standing up because they don't want no one to think they're dancing, you know. They're surreal squares. If there's any Adventists in town, that's cool. I love you. Don't take nothing between coffees or whatever. I got off the bus. I got off the bus. I've been drinking some wine on the bus. I took about 3 steps, tripped over a match, and wound up in a drunk tank with 6 drunken Sioux Indians. Them cats have never seen a Pollock before. Yeah, I stayed awake all night that night. I slept like this. I thought them cats were going to sacrifice me or something, violate me. Yeah, but they were just brothers under the gins like I was, just drunks. And 5 o'clock in the morning, we got our kick out. We hit the alleys of Lincoln, Nebraska, and we start drinking that red wine, that peachy red wine, and dropping some secondals and embutals, you understand, and drinking that wine and talking that talk and dropping them downers and not eating and drinking that wine and singing and talking that talk and dropping them downers. And I did that one for about 45 days, and I don't know why, but this deep depression came down on me. You know? Yeah, I used to sit around and cry a lot. You know, so one day I tried that easier, softer way that some of us have tried. You know, I tried to hang it up, and I took something, and I almost cut my hands off. I'll be glad to show anybody these scars after the meeting, unashamedly, my first suicide attempt. And I woke up in the hospital in the bed with bars on it and leather restraints on my shoulders and my neck to keep me from sleeping. And the nurse put a thing in my mouth and a cigarette, and she said, "How are you?" And I said, "Where am I?" She said, "You tried to kill yourself." I said, "Ain't this a bitch?" And about that time, a door opened up. A little old lady walked in, had on a black coat and a little hat with flowers on it and a briefcase. And she came up to me and she says, "Good morning, Mr. Posniak. How are you?" And I said, "Where'd you get that fucking hat?" Yeah. But see, she didn't laugh. You know, she took out this briefcase and took out these papers and signed them. And I didn't know the lady was a shrink. See, and one other thing, too, I might share with you guys. Did you guys know that a suicide attempt is against the law? Yeah, it is, man. Anyone in here tonight contemplating suicide, if you're going to do it, don't fuck with it. Do it. Because if you try it and don't make it, you're going to be in a world of shit. Yeah. Yeah. So as a result of that misdemeanor, they pulled a check on me and found out I was a felon. And I got committed to Lincoln State Hospital for the criminally insane in Lincoln, Nebraska. Yeah. The cuckoo's nest, everybody see the cuckoo's nest? Huh? That was me. Yeah, on the inside, looking out. You understand? 17 electric shock treatments, various forms of chemotherapy, hydrotherapy, psychotherapy, liquid thorazine, all fucked up, walking around, talking to the squirrels. Hey, what's happening, little squirrel? Oh, man. Yeah, but I want you to know something, see. I was not an alcoholic. No, sir. No, sir. I was not an alcoholic. See, what I was an anxiety neurotic. I was a manic depressive with schizophrenic tendencies. Because that's what the dude in the white coat told me I was. And that's what I wanted to be. I would buy any label other than an alcoholic. I did not want to be an alcoholic. Would not be an alcoholic. You know why? Because my mother was an alcoholic. Remember? Remember about my moms? I told you about my moms at the beginning. See, I didn't want nothing to do with that identification, you understand? I didn't want to even put in the same category as she was, you understand? It's all denial. Denial. See, what I didn't tell you was this. See, that my mother died from chronic alcoholism at the age of 42. Beat half to death. Unrecognizable to death. You understand? The insidiousness of this disease called alcoholism that I have. You would think all the shit that I saw as a kid and all the fear and feelings and resentments and anger and hostility and frustration, you would think that my guy, he would never pick up a drink, see? But I, too, because of denial, became an alcoholic and refused to do anything about it. And later on, I had total indifference, which meant that I knew I was an alcoholic, I just didn't give a shit. And this man sitting right here taught me the difference. He said a man with total indifference is the hardest man to work with. Because if a man don't want to get well, there ain't nothing you can do to help him. Yesterday, I celebrated 6 years of continuous sobriety. Yeah. That's the good news. The bad news is it took me 26 years to get six in this program. I have two messages for you tonight. Don't do what I did the way I did it. And secondly, trust in God, clean house, because that's what the book tells me to do. Trust God, clean house, and help others. I'll take it one step further. At the end of my drunk log, I'm going to do some recovery, because that's what we're here for anyhow. I drank for a lot longer. I drank for 29 years. Last time I went out, I had almost 3 years back-to-back sobriety in this valley, right here in this town. And because of resentments, and my massive amount of pride and ego and self-centeredness, I refused to take direction and deal with my blaring character defect called resentment. And I chose to drink instead. And I went on a 9-month run and I almost died. When I came back to my home group, the Thursday Night Closed Men's Study Group across the street, 400 West Campbell. I walked into the room and I was shaking like a cat having babies. I weighed 272 pounds. And I was beaten into a state of reasonableness, like the book says. My sponsor said to me, get yourself a big book, and I did. I didn't have any money, I stole a big book. You guys know a guy named Larry Tilbury? Tell him I got his book. The sponsor told me to open it at page 25, which says there is a solution. If alcoholism is a disease, and that is the problem, and it is a disease, it's a twofold disease. It's a unique disease, there's only one like it. It's a twofold disease. It's a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. And that's what I have. And when I take one of anything, one drink, one toke, one snort, whatever, one fix, pill, or whatever, it sets off something in me that it doesn't set off of what we call normies. And that is the phenomenon of the craving. I have to have more. How much is enough for me? All of it. All of it. When a bottle's gone, I'll go to any lengths to get another bottle. Understand? Recognizing that fact, I got to the book, page 25, says there is a solution. If alcoholism is a problem, there is a solution. The leveling of the pride, the revealing of our shortcomings to another, which the process requires for a successful consummation. Key word, requires. It doesn't say you should think about it. Maybe I ought to do this. When I get time, I'll get around to it. It don't say that. It says it's required for a successful consummation. Then I got page 30 in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a textbook. This is not a novel. This is not something to be read once and put up on the shelf to gather dust. This is a textbook to be read, studied, in my opinion, highlighted, and reread and restudied. I've been sober 6 years, and every time I open this sucker, I see something I missed before, something that they put in during the night last night. You know what I'm talking about? Fantastic book. On page 30, it talks about the step before the step, where it says, we learned that we had to concede fully to our innermost selves that we're alcoholic. That is the first step in recovery, period. That's what it says in that book. Concede, surrender, give up. And that's what I had to do. That shit kicked my ass, man, for 29 years. You know, I had to look in a mirror. Concede meant not to a judge or to a wife or a parole officer or none of that shit. I'm talking about looking in a mirror and looking at me and saying, man, you can't handle that stuff anymore. That's the step before the steps, and I took that one. Then I got into step one, and we were powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. I had no problem with the unmanageability of my life, none. All I had to do was look at where I'd been and what had done to me. Powerless, With as much pride as I had, I wasn't powerless over nothing. You don't come from 31st and Halsted and be powerless. You don't make it. You don't go into the Marine Corps and be powerless. You don't survive. You're certainly not powerless in a penitentiary. You'd be washing somebody's socks. You know what I'm saying? You can't be powerless on the street because they'll take every fucking thing you got. So I took umbrage to the word powerless. But in the meantime, I took some direction, too. I didn't drink. It was suggested 90 meetings in 90 days. I probably doubled that, didn't I, Jack? And I grabbed a lot of shirt tails and I hung on. And all of a sudden one day, I became aware that I was indeed powerless over alcohol. You know what powerless meant to me? I cannot take one drink and guarantee my behavior, folks. That's a fact. I cannot take one drink and guarantee my behavior. I don't fuck with it. I drink it. I went to New Year's Eve party one time. I came home in April. I'm talking whoopee, you know. They told me I had a good time. I don't know, man. You know? Yeah. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. The first thing I did was take umbrage to the word sanity. I mean, they let me out of that nut house, man. I had papers to prove that I was okay. You know what I'm talking about? But that's not what the book's talking about when it talks about insanity. is talking about being physically sober and picking up the first drink. It says there in the book. I think it's page 37. When we began drinking deliberately instead of casually, there was usually little or no effect of thought during the time of premeditation as to what the terrific consequences might be. That's insanity. That's what I did the last time when I had 3 years. I picked up that drink, not thinking about what was going to happen. Being physically sober. How regretted myself, I had a lot of problems with that one. You see, I told you about my Roman Catholic upbringing. And my concept of a higher power was fucked. See, my God was a gotcha God, a punishing God, a fearful God, a getcha God. And my God lived upstairs in the clouds somewhere behind a tree, you know, and he used to watch me all the time. Yeah. And every time I looked at a sweater or a pair of jeans or masturbated or whatever, he'd say, gotcha! Gotcha! You know, yeah, you know, and if I got enough gotchas on my ass and I happen to croak, I'm going to hell and shovel coal, you know. Or if I got over on the world and died without any gotchas on me, I went to heaven and played a harp with Gabriel or somebody. I don't know, man. But you know, I was sober for about a year. And I went down to a retreat at Sylmar, down the Pacific Grove, okay? Now keep in mind that this time I've been in California for almost 10 years. I'm a sun freak. I'm a water freak. I'm an ex-jock. And I've never been on a California beach in 10 years. I was too busy taking care of business. See, alcoholics got to take care of business. I worked in San Francisco for 5 years and never saw the Golden Gate Bridge, man. Never got out the mission. You know what I'm talking about? Weird. I went down to this retreat, and I'm walking along the beach, man, and I had my pant legs rolled up, and there's a blue sky and a few puffy clouds. And see, you Californians are spoiled, man, because it's right over here. You don't even go. See, but when you're from the stink of that stockyards where I come from, I looked at the magnificence of this beautiful place. It's the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And I asked myself one question. Who made this? Who made this? And it occurred to me, God made this. That's what they're talking about. The power greater than yourself. And I said, right on. And I went back to the lodge. Jack was there, and I shared it with Jack, and we talked about it. And I took my second step. And later on, I took my third step out loud with another human being, like it says in the book, where I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. And thank God that our founders in their wisdom put those words in there, as you understand Him. God, as you understand Him. If I came here and you people told me I had to believe in Jesus, or I had to believe in Allah, or Buddha, or Leroy, whatever, I would have said, see you later, I'm gone. Don't tell me what I got to believe in. But you didn't say that. You said, just believe in something that's just a little bit more powerful than you. And you left the door wide open. I could pick anything. And I choose to call that the higher power God today, okay? Then I got this step four where it says, made a searching for more fearless, more inventory of myself. And I stopped. I was one of those waltz members. One, two, three, stop. One, two, three, stop. Waltz time. But I stayed sober. I procrastinated on my fourth step because I didn't want to reopen this can of worms called my life and write it down and re-experience all those feelings that I had felt all my life. And I was sober, but my life kept getting worse. And I kept running to this guy, my sponsor, and I'd say, Jack, that fucking job I got is driving me crazy. And Jack used to say, work the fourth step, goddammit. And I said, Jack, I ain't talking about no step, man. I'm talking about my gig, you know. And this thing with me and Joni, my wife, man, I mean, she's driving me nuts. And Jack could say, work your fourth step, goddammit. I say, Jack, you son of a bitch, you've been sober too long. Your hearing's going, man. I'm talking about my old lady. You're talking a bunch of shit about steps, man. And finally, you know, Jack, you can only go so far with Jack. He's, all right, goddammit. I'm through fucking with you. You will go home and you will do your fourth step and you will have it in my house in 4 weeks. And I said, wait a minute. You show me where it says in this goddamn book. Where a sponsor can tell his baby what he's... I thought I had a loophole, right? Yeah. 5 weeks later, I showed up, right? Just out of defiance. It was that night that I found out what a beautiful individual my sponsor really is. My sponsor is sitting right here, Jack H. He's got 27 years back-to-back in this program. And I'm not saying this because he's in attendance tonight. This is the second time in 6 years that Jack has ever heard me talk. I love this man more than I've ever loved another human being in my life. He is the father I've never had. This man is a very loving, lovable, understanding, empathetic, compassionate, tough love, ass-kicking specialist. That's what he is. And that's exactly what the higher power ordered for me. I owe this man my life. All my life. And he knows that. We talk. We talked that night on his couch for about 6 hours. And for the first time in my life, I got completely naked and completely honest with another human being emotionally. This man knows things about me that no other human being knows. And I am assured and I know in my guts that they will go to the grave with him. Confidentiality is very, very important when you take your fifth step. Don't take your fifth step with some asshole and you're going to hear it at Bernie's tomorrow night. No offense, Bernie. You make good spaghetti sauce, kid. Took the fourth and fifth step that night and also took the sixth and seventh step that night where we looked at my character defects and shortcomings. It took me quite a while to learn that character defects and shortcomings are synonymous. They mean the same thing. What happened when I took my fifth step with my sponsor, when I read my fourth step to him, and in taking the fifth, the character defects sort of rose to the top like cream. And what we did in six and seven was skim them off, and I wrote them down on a piece of paper. And to me, and this is only my opinion like everything else I say here tonight, six and seven to me is an ongoing process. It's not something that's done and over with for this alcoholic. Sure, I did the seven-step prayer, and I humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. But I keep taking them back. The program talks about spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. There ain't no St. Paz, and there ain't never going to be no St. Paz. I'm just better, a little bit better than I used to be. I'm a little bit better today than I was yesterday. I'm more honest today than I was yesterday. I'm less resentful today than I was yesterday. I'm less prideful today than I was yesterday. And that's how it goes, one day at a time. Steps 8 and 9, the amends step. Had to make a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. I put my name at the top of the list because I had fucked myself more than I had messed around with anybody else. Then I made this list. When it came time to step 9, I made the recommends to myself first by staying sober. Okay? And then I had to deal with some real heavy shit for me. Remember I told you about my father? I had lifelong resentment towards my father. While I was in the penitentiary, I used to lay awake nights thinking how I was going to kill my father. I was going to waste him when I got out of the joint for all the shit he had done to my mother. So now I'm sober and it came time for me to make amends. I never did anything to my father, never, except cause him a lot of grief by going to the penitentiary and doing those things and a lot of humiliation and embarrassment. And I called my father long distance from right here in California. And I talked to him on the phone. I said, Dad, I said, I'm truly sorry for any bad feelings that I might have caused between us or any embarrassing moments I might have caused you. My father said, fuck you, you're lying. And I was crushed. And the last words I've ever said to my father was, I love you. And I hung up the phone. I went to this man. And I was crying and I said, Jack, I made amends to my dad and he wouldn't accept him. And Jack told me, scratch his name off the list. You made the amends, he didn't accept him, that's on him. And I said, right on. The next one I made amends to was my mother. And you might say, how can you make amends to your mother when she was dead? Thank God my mother died before I really got off of my alcoholism, and I never really had an opportunity to use or abuse her, okay? But what I did, and this fits for me, sounds a little weird to some people, I wrote a letter to my mother who was deceased. And in the letter, because of the awarenesses that I got in this program about this disease called alcoholism, I wrote a letter to my mother and I told her I finally understood the suffering that she went through in her lifetime. I told her I understood, and I no longer resented her. And I no longer was suffering from humiliation that she had caused me as a child. Things like showing up drunk at school and all those things and embarrassing me in front of my peers. And I told her I forgave her, and I told her I loved her. And I told her I was like her. I told her I was just like her. And I dropped that letter in the mailbox, and I addressed it to my mother's name, Heaven USA, and I dropped it in a mailbox with no stamp. I don't know if anyone ever read it. It's not important if anyone ever read it. It's important that I wrote it. Steps 10, 11, and 12, the maintenance steps of this program. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, wrong, promptly admitted. I believe that you can work step 10 from the day you come into this program. Because when I got here, I had a great big bag of shit over my shoulders, and it's called the wreckage of my past. And until I do step 4 and 5, I'm going to carry this bag of shit with me in my sobriety. Now, step 10 allows me on a daily basis to get rid of these little piles of shit that I build up every day. If I work step 10 every day, I get rid of little piles of shit. If I don't work that pen every day, I already got this big bag of shit over here. And if I don't work that pen every day, I got, first thing you know, I got two bags of shit like this, and my chances of staying clean and sober are less than average. Understand? All step pen is to me is a daily spot check of how I'm doing. Okay? When I'm wrong, promptly admit it. There's more to step 10 than that. Okay? Step 10 tells me that now it's a spiritual axiom. That when my head is spinning around or I got a rock in my gut, it's no longer you or people, places, or things. It's me. It's me. The responsibility for my feelings lie right here on top of my bald head. It's either my acceptance or non-acceptance of any given situation. And the ability to surrender to such situation, which I share with my sponsor tonight at dinner. Step 11, sought-through prayer meditation. To improve my conscious contact with God as I understand and praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. I told you before, I ain't no saint. I ain't no saint. I believe in keeping things simple. The theme that I have for working the steps with new guys is we're going to have a theme for the 12 steps. It's called Keep It Simple. My spiritual concepts are simple. Okay? In the morning when I get up, I have what I took a page out of Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. And I took another page out of Dr. Bob of the Old Timers. And I do what the old timers used to insist their babies do every morning, and that is have a quiet time. As soon as, if I'm lucky enough to open my eyes in the morning, I say my good friend Dr. Fred's prayer. Where is he? He gave me a prayer, and I say, and it says, Good morning, Heavenly Father. Thank you for this day of sobriety, freedom, and joy. And thank you for showing me what you would have me do and for giving me the strength, the courage, and the patience to do thy will. And that's on my way to go make duty. You know what I'm talking about? I ain't even awake yet. You understand? And I'm doing that number. And then I go make duty. And now since I've been sober for a while, I got one of the electric coffee pots. My coffee's ready when I get up in the morning. God is good, Pat. God is good. You know what I mean? And then I go get myself a cup of coffee and I open up the drapes and I sit in my chair. And I have my morning quiet time, and I thank my Heavenly Father for this day of sobriety. And I ask Him to direct my thinking, because I know that left of my own devices, I'm going to fuck it up. Okay? And I ask Him to let me know what His will is for me today. See, my final prayer every morning is keep an eye on the kid. See, I talk to God the way I talk to you. I cannot be a pious dude. That's not me. You understand? I cannot walk around like some people. Oh, man, that's fine. I can't do it. If I do that, God says to me, yo, pause, you're jiving. See, is it God or Rocky? Yo, pause, whatever. Okay. Contrary to popular belief, God has never talked to me. See, prayer is talking to God. Meditating, as I understand, is listening to God. I asked a guy one time from Saturday Night Live group, he'd been sober for a while. I said, who's your sponsor? You ready for this? When the guy's sober a year, he says, God is my sponsor. I said, right on. I said, when's the last time your sponsor talked to you? You know, the dude looked at me like I was weird. See, God doesn't talk to me. People talk to me. God talks to me through people. In my quiet time, God has never said to me, good morning, Paz. Here's what I want you to do today. When you get done talking to me, I want you to get dressed. Get in your little AA car, and I want you to go to 52 North 5th Street. Upstairs in the back apartment B, you'll find a shit the pants drunk. Go get him, take him with me tonight. You know, it's like Mission Impossible, right? This will destruct the 10 seconds or something, right? No. God doesn't do that to me, see? But what happens is after I have my quiet time, the phone will ring and the voice will say, Pause, honey, this is Bernadette down at Central Office. You got a pencil and paper, 52 North 5th Street, apartment B upstairs in the back. There's a sheet of pants drunk up there taking the men's meeting tonight. Ah. See, that's God working through people. And I believe that. At nighttime, I cannot go to sleep until I say my prayers. It's just that simple. I hit the boards every night, and I thank my Heavenly Father for this day of sobriety. I ask Him to keep an eye on all the guys that I'm working with. And I ask Him to bless the brothers and sisters that are still out there in the streets killing themselves with that shit. And then I go to the key at night, and I ask Him to cover me with His white light, and I go to bed, and I sleep like a baby. Sleep the sleep of angels. It's good. It's good. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to hear this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. What is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps to me? To me, it's a couple things. It's a culmination of a various number of spiritual experiences I've had in my sobriety. I shared one with you today about being on the beach. That was a spiritual experience for me. I've had numerous spiritual experiences. Virgil, the guy you heard tonight, to me, is a spiritual experience. I've watched this man grow in this past year. There's other guys in this room. guys that I work with, guys that I don't work with, you people. I've seen you guys come in here all fucked up. And I've watched program work in your life, and I've watched God work in your life, and I've become tremendously cognizant and aware that God could and would if he was sought. And it also means to me the futility of trying to run this life on my own will without God in it. You understand? Yeah, futility of self-will run riot. It also means to me, spiritual awakening means to me that if I do what I'm supposed to do every day, I'm going to be fine. If I do what I'm supposed to do every day, then I can do whatever I want to do. But I have to do what I'm supposed to do first every day. And it works for me. Carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers, I try. When my phone rings, I answer. When they ask me to go someplace, I go. It's just that simple. If it wasn't for that part of the 12 step, I would not be here tonight. Because there's people like this man sitting right here and a whole bunch of other people in this fellowship that saved my life. They didn't give up on me. And I'm here tonight and I'm sober and I'm alive. Practice these principles in all our affairs. I don't. I try. I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I really am. See, we don't take the steps. We don't work the steps. We live the steps. We live the steps. You understand? You live the steps. This program is designed for living. I don't give a fuck what comes down. Good times, bad times, good health, bad health, financial insecurity, whatever, good things. You don't take nothing. You don't take nothing. You hang on and you keep coming back and it works. It works. You 14 new people, you stay here. You don't take nothing. You keep coming back. You grab the shirt tails if you're a guy. You grab the blouses if you're a lady. You get sponsored. You get a book. You work the steps. If your life don't get better, I'll kiss your ass and your elbow blades. And that's the most spiritual statement I made all week. You hear what I'm saying? That tells you something about my degree of spirituality. It's a hell of a program. I'm a great believer in the word heritage as it applies to my AA program, to the program as I understand it. My sponsor's got 27 years back to back. His sponsor, L.E.'s, coming up on 34 in a row. I've had the privilege of having hundreds of hours of one-on-ones with these men. My grand sponsor says, and I concur with all humility, that in order to attain and maintain a comfortable sobriety, and that's what we're here for, folks, to learn how to live comfortably without taking nothing, that there are three things necessary to utilize on a daily basis. Number one is a higher power as you understand him. Secondly, is this basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And last but not least is the people. The people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? The people in the fellowship of the Spirit. Fellowship of the Spirit, to me, infers people that have taken the steps. It doesn't mean people that hang out. I'm talking about people that are into action. Program action. Program action means pause, working on pause. It don't mean Pa's working on Rick or Joe or Sam or Louie. That's part of it, but primarily it's Pa's working on Pa's. I've taken these steps. I've worked these steps. I live these steps to the best of my ability, and I think I'm a member of the Fellowship of the Spirit. People are very important in this program. God works to me through people. Ask yourself a question. What happens if you came to this meeting of Saturday Night Live group of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight and there was nobody here? If you're an alcoholic like me, you're in a world of shit. What happens if you call central office and nobody answers? Huh? You're in trouble, right? I know I would be. Let me tell you about people. Two kinds of people. People like us in rooms like this all over the world tonight, and the other folks, the other people, the friends, the so-called friends and partners that I had out there before I got here, and I'm only speaking for me. All those people out there wanted from me was this, folks. It's called money. It's called bread. It's called guilt. It's called a Nero, it's called cash, it's called green. If you ain't got this out there, you ain't shit. Do you hear what I'm saying to you? And if you don't believe me, when we say amen, take your ass over to the Winchester Lounge. Put it on the stool, and when a man comes over, order a double. Fuck it, if you're going to drink, order a triple. And when he puts it down in front of you, drink it down real fast, and then tell him you ain't got no money. Yeah, now if you look like me or him, you're in a world of shit because the guy's going to put some hurting on your head. Of course, there's a whole lot of foxes here. You know, and you ladies can get your drugs and your booze for nothing, right? Uh-huh. Until closing time. And that's when you pay your tab. See? And I know about that one. And I know how much it hurts you. But you did that one. Understand. And here they don't care about money. They don't care about where you live. You can come from Hillsboro or the streets. You can come here from Yale or jail. You understand? You could be white or black or blue or pink or green, whatever color means, or Polish or Italian or Mexican or whatever. They don't care. AA is the only place in the world that I know where you can come through the door with your pants full of shit, your privates exposed, stink, cuss, tell everybody they're crazy and you're going to steal every fucking thing they got. And someone will say, welcome, brother and sister, you're in the right spot. Shut up, sit down, have a cup of coffee. Alcoholics Anonymous. Fantastic. There are three people that I have to give credit where credit's due. One is my grand sponsor, Ali. The other one's my sponsor, Jack Hope. And there was a woman in my life one time, she'd be dead 4 years this month, her name was Joni. And I always give Joni credit. Joni was my wife. She had 9 years sober in this program when she died from cancer. It took her 45 days to go. And I love that woman. She taught me what love is. I didn't know anything about love prior to my getting here. And she taught me that love is giving. Love is giving, and you are what you give. There's not a day goes by when I don't ask myself, with God's help, what am I going to give back to this fellowship today that gave me so much free? If there is a heaven, if there is such a place, Joni's up there right now with my mother. With my mother. And they're looking down and they're saying, sock it to him, kid, and keep on keeping on one day at a time. That's what it's all about. One drunk helps another drunk. We both stay sober today. Don't forget that. I don't. In closing, I'm going to read you a poem. I always close with this poem. It's not an AA poem. It's not official AA literature, but it's a dynamite poem. What it is, it's my story in the form of poetry. Ironically enough, I didn't write it. The lady did not write it for me. This lady's name is Thelma G. She's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous for 30 years. She lives here in San Jose, California. And she wrote this poem, and I'd like to close the meeting with this poem, and hopefully you'll hear something, because I did. It's entitled, How It Works. And it says very simply, utter confusion, misery, and pain, humiliation, remorseful, ashamed, dreading to face the light of the day and not wanting to hear what people would say. Like, where is your willpower? Where is your pride? They don't understand that deep down inside, I wish I knew the answers to give or how to find the courage to live. I had taken the pills they told me I should. I tried all the cures, but they did no good. I made many promises and meant them too, but the compulsion to drink is stronger than you. One day a friend happened to say, I know the answer, I can show you a way. All it takes is an open mind and believe what you hear from your very own kind. So I went to a meeting and they read chapter 5. The steps made some sense and hope was revived. I saw living proof of what faith can do. It worked for them, why not for you? One day at a time, they told me to live. They said, easy does it and learn to forgive. Be humble, be honest, and help when you can. And pass on what you learned to a brand new man. I heard them repeat the serenity prayer and soon realized all my answers were there. And now when someone asks, can miracles be? May I always reply, take a look at me. Thank you all for 12-step and meeting.
Thank everybody for showing up and thank yourselves for showing up. Thanks, Virgil, for a 10-minute speaker.